Hey y'all, I'm Sammy, your host of the You Are Made for More podcast. John 10:10 is a promise that Jesus came down to earth so that we would have life and have it abundantly. My prayer is that this podcast and all of the content that we put out will remind every student that they were made for more simply because of who they were created to be. My own walk with the Lord and my relationships with the teenagers that I disciple have shown me that once we understand whose we are, the game changes, or in other words, transformation happens. Our identity changes everything. We recognize that it takes investment and partnership between the church and parents to raise teens who know and believe who they are in Jesus, and we're here to help with that. So buckle up as we take this journey and take a look at what God has to say about friendships, relationships, sexuality, dating, and all the things in between. Today on the You Are Made for More podcast, we are gonna have the chance to hear from a guy named Josiah Friedman, who is the CEO of Voices for the Voiceless, which is an organization that spends every day advocating for the worth and dignity of human beings. But more importantly, they have the mission of making sure that every woman in America is surrounded by relationships and that they never feel like they have to face an unplanned pregnancy alone. Josiah is going to talk about the statistics surrounding abortion and how in reality, almost half of women feel like they have to have abortions because of the lack of support and the lack of relationships in their lives. He's going to give us really practical tips and what it looks like to love our neighbor like Jesus commands us to. And I just am really excited for you guys to hear my conversation with him. I left the conversation really encouraged and spurred on in the work that I'm doing. And I know that his heart is probably gonna ignite something in your heart to fight for the worth and dignity of every human being because of who God says that we are. So without further ado, we're going to jump right in to my conversation with Josiah. All right, Josiah, welcome to the You Are Made for More podcast. Thank you so much for taking the time and being with us today. I always like to start these conversations. I kind of already did a short intro about who you are and what you're up to for our listeners, but I want to ask you, and we want to hear from you, who you are and what you're all about and kind of what your day-to-day looks like. So go ahead and tell us a little bit about who Josiah Friedman is.
Yeah, well, Sammy, thanks for having me on. Really excited to be here. You know, my day-to-day is a little weird. I'm really passionate about reaching my generation with the pro-life message, and I'm really passionate about building a world where no one faces unplanned pregnancy alone. Every day I work as the CEO of Voices for the Voiceless. We're based in downtown Phoenix. It's about 110 degrees today, so it's, you know, it's blazing hot. And you know, I am a storyteller, first and foremost. I interview people who have amazing stories of sometimes grief, triumph, sometimes stories where they were incredibly alone, sometimes stories where they were remarkably afraid, and sometimes where they were incredibly courageous. There's a lot of stories that come into our world from this thing we call unplanned pregnancy, which is an experience, you know, about including the guys in this, in, you know, that factor into the situation, affects about, you know, 4 million Americans every year. And, you know, I tell their stories. That's what I do for a living. So I sit across from a lot of people and interview them. Yeah, it's a weird day to day, but it's been awesome.
Wow. That is so cool. Such an important message. The reason I asked, just for our listeners, just you to come on, was I had a coworker of mine had showed me your TED talk that you did, which we'll link in the show notes so everyone can take a look at that. But I was just really inspired by the passion that you had for what you do, and you are such a gifted storyteller. And that, so I knew that just getting to hear from you would really speak a lot to our listeners. So I want to jump in and ask you, first of all, tell me about what your faith journey has looked like before we jump into Voices for the Voiceless and your organization and reaching people of this generation about abortion with the pro-life message. Tell me a little bit about you. What did that look like for you growing up? Did you grow up in church, and what does it look like for you now?
Yeah. So I grew up a church kid, which was not something that if you would have known my parents, you would have thought would happen. So I grew up in a Christian home with great parents. My dad grew up in a Jewish, very atheistic family in Philadelphia. And my mom grew up in a Catholic family, somewhat devout, in Minnesota. And neither of my parents really knew Jesus until they were in their 20s. And so my faith journey really started, as it does for a lot of church kids, you know, with that seed, with that, the faith that they had. But there were two really important iterations. I would say I really got saved when I was about 14 or 15 years old. I had grown up in the church. I had heard a lot of these messages. But it hadn't clicked necessarily that this was a faith that was, you know, that God might ask me to take risks, that there might be, you know, times in my life that we as Christians should live in a world, not shielding ourselves from the pain that's really out there, but that God asks us, as followers of Jesus, to go right into the middle of that pain, to provide his restoration. And I think I finally sort of realized that, and God got a hold of my life when I was a teenager, and really just called me to do something. So I ended up starting this little pro-life group that met in my living room. And God had his hand on it, even then. You know, we did a lot of community education and things, praying out in front of abortion clinics, that type of thing. And I became a firebrand, sort of on fire for this mission. I didn't have a lot of, thought into the strategy of it all, but God, clearly had his hand on my life, getting me involved in this work at a very early age. And there was another important iteration, you know, after I went to college and some different things, happened in my life, that God really challenged my faith again. Because, you know, my faith and especially my passion to be involved in the work that I do now was mainly fueled by a desire for justice, you know, a desire for life to be protected. I've always been a numbers guy. This seemed like one of the greatest injustices in the world. And so because of that, I got involved. But around the time I was, about 19 years old, I was in college. This ended up really being a part of my faith journey. My mom sat me down on the couch and told me a story I'd never heard before, about a time when she was 19 years old, growing up in White Bear Lake, Minnesota, a town where everybody knew everybody else, with a devout, a devout Catholic mother and a father who is a World War II vet with the character that had earned a very high reputation. And she found herself in an unplanned pregnancy. From that moment, my mom didn't know what to do. She was just determined about one thing, and that was that her father could never find out about this. And so she went and she had an abortion. And I'd always known that my mom was a little bit uncomfortable with what I had been, doing in high school, and this sort of firebrand spirit that I had. And sitting across from her and hearing this story for the first time, I realized a couple of things. One, it took a tremendous amount of courage for my mom to share that story with me, as it does for so many people in the faith community who have experienced an abortion and are deeply worried how the opinions of other people would affect them if they ever became open about it. And two, God just used that moment to grow my faith in a big way, to say, look, my heart in this, in all fights for justice, is not as much about numbers. My heart, even this, even isn't as much about truth. My heart is for real people. And it just kind of blew me away that I lived in a world that was filled with people who were hurting because of this, because of experiences that they had experienced or things that they were currently going through. And it drastically changed how I looked at faith and God's call on my life. But I would say those were the iterations of it. In high school is really when it started, but God's been very faithful to mold me into someone that's able to look at this world, just a little bit more like he does than I did back then. I'm sure there will be many more iterations of this, but that's where I'm at now.
That is awesome. I love that one key phrase that you share that where you talk about your heart being for real people. And I think your mom played a huge part in sharing her story with you. You kind of got to see an inside look at the pain and a lot of the times the trauma that abortion has on women mentally, emotionally, spiritually, physically, all of those things. And I talked to so many people who have a heart for people, but they look at abortion as just an issue and not as involving real people. So I think that's a really key point. And that reminds me of the phrase, the scripture in the Bible that talks about loving our neighbor, right? Like, what does that mean to you in this pro-life arena or in your daily life? What does it mean for you as a person with a lot of passion about this life issue for women in unplanned pregnancies or who have had abortions? You have a huge heart for them. So what does it look like for you to love your neighbor in this specific way?
Sammy, it's a big question. I'm going to do my best to answer it. And I think there are two ways that we can really look at an answer to in our world today, especially when it comes to unplanned pregnancy. What does it mean to love your neighbor? I think there's two ways we can look at this. Number one, I think those who love their neighbor have to have a particular way that we look at this issue and that we look at society. Loving our neighbor is a call from Jesus, clearly, to love in a sacrificial way. That really means loving people no matter what they can do for you, no matter what someone or even they have done to you, and no matter what someone believes about the world right now. And I think that that last one is something I've been really passionate about. We live in a culture that's growing deeply polarized on many political issues, including this one. And we have to realize that God can really get a hold of people's hearts in big ways. And people who disagree with us are not our enemies. They are our neighbors. And, you know, to reach them, it takes a willingness to listen and a willingness to sit there and sometimes a willingness to honestly share the truth. But I think it looks, you know, that's what it looks like for society and how we look about the people who believe certain things. When it comes to unplanned pregnancy, I think there's an even bigger thing that it means for us, though. There was a study, I don't know if you saw it released a couple of days ago, a Vox study that said about a quarter of millennials say that they don't have any friends at all. Not a single friend in the world. And I feel that. We live in a digital age where people are much more connected than ever before, but have fewer deep friendships than they've ever had before. And that's, you know, that's significant because loving your neighbor in that world means really being a friend. And when people face unplanned pregnancy, this is something that oftentimes is a traumatic experience. And what I mean by that is, you know, the fight, flight, or freeze instincts are activated in your brain. You make decisions based on what you're afraid of and running from things that you don't want to happen instead of honestly evaluating your circumstances and looking at what's in front of you. And being a neighbor to someone in that situation looks like something that's very hard to do. As people who believe strongly in the dignity of every human life and believe that there is a decision that she should make, being a neighbor in that moment, I think, means listening first, so that someone can actually get the mental room that they need to regain control over this situation in their own mind. Expressing a commitment, and this is the hardest one, I think, to walk alongside her or him, no matter what they choose, that's got to be on our lips right at the beginning. And I think it also means being honest about what you believe when the time is right. You know, being a neighbor in our culture doesn't mean that we just lay down everything that we believe for the betterment of others. We know that the things that we believe in the dignity of every human life, we believe in restoration, we believe in inclusivity, all these things that Jesus came to this earth and demonstrated, we believe these things, and they have a place in, you know, in this discussion. And we've got to show the resolve to be patient and the willingness to share those when the time is right. And I think that's what it looks like for someone going through that situation to love your neighbor.
That's really good. Really good practical steps. I'm going to go off of something you said about making decisions based off of what you're afraid of, because this is something that, again, drew me to the message you're trying to spread and made me realize that this is really important to have a conversation about. But your Twitter bio has a quote in it, and it says, "Most people are empowered when they're making decisions out of love, not out of fear." Can you tell us a little bit more about what you mean by that and where your belief about that comes from?
Absolutely. You know, when it comes to this, I think it's important to share a little bit about an experience we had last year. So last year, my team and I went across the West Coast to interview 130 strangers about their experiences with unplanned pregnancy and abortion. And you know, it was a little extreme and a little ridiculous, but it came from a deep resolve to understand why, you know, what do people feel when they experience unplanned pregnancy? What are the experiences that people have that are normal in our society that we may not always hear about because we can live in our own subculture, in our own world? We wanted to get around that and really ask people. And we heard so many stories. They were... many of them were very inspiring. The vast majority, I would say, were heartbreaking. And that's because today we live in a world where really every year in our country, you know, there are about, 875,000 abortions or so that happen every single year. But one of the statistics people don't know is that at least 400,000 of those are women who have abortions because of relationship problems, because they don't have the support of their partners, parents, friends, employers, and medical professionals.
Wow.
When you experience an unplanned pregnancy, this is not only the questions floating around your mind were not only what you think they'd be. You know, what is my future going to look like? How am I going to be able to pursue the dreams I had set out for myself before? It's feeling more cornered than you ever have before, because you are tremendously isolated. You're going through these alone. From the women that we interviewed who talked about their boyfriends, you know, walking out and never speaking to them, after they revealed that they were pregnant, to the parents that kicked their kids out of the house when they shared that they were pregnant, to the employers that basically told her indirectly or directly in many different ways, you know, you're going to have to go somewhere else. This isn't going to be something you're going to be able to do. To the people who received a diagnosis of some sort of prenatal disability from a medical professional who just, you know, said, well, there's clearly no future here. You're better off just having an abortion. Those are the circumstances in our country that people face routinely when they find out that they are pregnant. And in those instances, you know, people are making decisions almost entirely out of fear. Now, you know, prominent psychiatrists like Bessel van der Kolk have found that even experiences that don't seem inherently traumatic often are when we don't have the right support, when we feel unsafe or disconnected from, like, parents who can't find out, or friends who will judge us, or partners who might not stick around even from the child growing inside, when we experience that degree of disconnection, what we really need is we need an opportunity and a space where we can be vulnerable, where we can feel loved and we feel that someone is standing alongside us who's not going to leave. They're going to stick around. And, you know, in that instance, so in many cases, what we learn from this experience is we live in a world right now where unplanned pregnancy decisions are dominated by feeling like you're in a corner and deciding out of fear. And that's why so many people make these decisions in the way that they do. It's why 400,000 of them every year have abortions when they don't really want them. They just feel like there's no other way. And the only force that can change us, or really change that, I would say, are real friends who are willing to stand by someone.
Yeah. And you're so right. I think that the lack of relationships, the lack of support, that's a scary thing. You know, like, we were made for a relationship. That's how God made us. We talk about that a lot on this podcast. And when those things are feeling threatened, you automatically want to do whatever you have to do, no matter how traumatizing it seems, to protect the relationships that you already have. So on top of that, when you're going to a doctor and they're telling you, you know, actually your best option is probably going to be to have an abortion, it makes that decision to have an abortion seem really easy. And like, the pain and being afraid is just going to go away, when in fact that isn't the case. And I love that vision. I love just how you talked about empowerment. And that's really, I think, why you started Voices for the Voiceless. Can you tell us about the organization that you run and how that came to fruition? Like, give us a snapshot of what that looked like.
Yeah, when we started Voices for the Voiceless, it didn't start how I think it would. So it was a weird, you know, I've been involved in this movement about 10 years. I started when I was 16. So it's been a little while. There have been many iterations. You know, when we started, we were really passionate about two things, politics and philosophy. The idea was that if you could persuade someone, you know, with effective apologetics and reasoning, and if you could have enough momentum going politically, that we could really change this thing. And I still believe that those are two of the most important elements of this movement. But I gotta tell you, when I was in college, I was a political science major. I was like, you know what? My dream is to be some sort of, you know, I guess it was William Wilberforce character, you know, in this movement. I want to lead this, this charge for political change. And a couple things happened. One, I got invited to pray on the floor of the Arizona House of Representatives to open the session on what was, I believe, the 42nd anniversary of Roe versus Wade. And I thought this for me, that this was around the time that my mom first shared her story, but I think slightly before. And I thought in this moment, you know what? This is what it's all about. I'm going to go on this floor. I'm going to say these things. This is going to be a moment of real change. And so I did. I went under the floor. I had a lot of ambition and thoughts, and I prayed, and I watched as all around the room right after my prayer, pro-lifers got up and extolled what I said, and pro-choice politicians got up and shouted it down. So much so that at one point you had a pro-life politician get up and call for a moment of silence for all the children we'd lost since Roe. And many of the pro-choice representatives knelt down in response instead of standing up. And it was just a picture of division. Yeah. God used that in my life, I think, to ask this. You know, there's a very important service element to the pro-life movement and a very important political element to the pro-life movement. But one thing I realized was, you know what? There's an incredibly important cultural need in this movement for somebody to go in and to be able to actually reach across the aisle in many different ways, engage people of many backgrounds and faiths and political views, and bring them together. Because I'll tell you this, we live in a world, I genuinely believe, where most people are pro-life. You see that in a lot of their views around a plethora of different issues. You know, and for many of my good friends who sit, more slightly left leaning, I would say that their views on, immigration and the death penalty, even sometimes the climate show that they do care about human life on this planet deeply. They already believe in the dignity of every human person. They just haven't made the connection yet.
Right.
And I believe that making that connection is important. And so after my mom's story, I really began to wonder, what does it look like to help people make this connection and see the connection between human dignity and this movement, between true empowerment for people who are facing unplanned pregnancy and this message? And, you know, I began to see with my mom's story so many people out there who had these stories that had never shared them before, who were the key to really turning this culture around and helping people see this issue in a new, slightly less politically charged way where they could actually really evaluate it. So at Voices, we work toward two ends. We tell stories to change perspectives on this issue and how people look at it. And in turn, those stories, especially when we tell stories about people who haven't received genuine support, are motivating people across the country to become people who, as we say, stand by her, whose first commitment is that in their community, no one would face unplanned pregnancy alone or feel like they had to make a decision out of fear.
Mm. I love that mission. I love how you guys really focus on storytelling. Like, that's such a unique niche that I think a lot of people don't know on HIS that I know of besides you guys. And so I want to ask you, what is the biggest thing that God has spoken to you through these stories that you've heard? And do you have a favorite that you remember that you want to share with us?
Coming up with a favorite, Sammy, is like the hardest question you've asked me so far, but I'm going to try. I will tell you this. We tell hundreds of stories. I think one of the biggest things, that God, you know, I think a lot of our reaction as pro-lifers in this culture, can be based on frustration. And I think that's deeply troubling to me, because it means that in political conversations, we're so frustrated, we generally don't represent ourselves very well. And it can mean that, you know, we raise money and take advantage of different opportunities, and we do so with like anger as our main motivating force. And I think the biggest thing that God has been showing us is that, in fact, hope should be the main motivating force behind this work in our message. And I'll give you an example. I was in San Francisco as we were filming that documentary series. I walked up to a guy who was on his way to work. I kind of stopped him in the middle of things. We had an amazing conversation. Now, statistically, it's important to understand two things about why this conversation was significant. When Roe became the law of the land, in 1973, the rate of fatherlessness in the United States instantly doubled, like almost instantly. You wouldn't think this was the case, because a lot of those children that would have been born into fatherless homes would have never been born, but it was. It drastically changed how men reacted to unplanned pregnancy. And we know this because the same thing happened in the UK, and the same thing happened in Canada when abortion became legal. And so I'm standing in front of this guy, and he tells me a story about how the first thing, you know, that came to mind when his girlfriend called him on the phone and told him that she was pregnant was, "That's great. By who?" is how he said. He was in utter shock that this could be happening to him. He was in school. and just shared with me, you know what, he couldn't focus. He couldn't concentrate. Everything went back to that one moment. And he said, you know what, we need to get an abortion. And she said, we don't have enough money to have an abortion. And he was like, she seems to be bent on moving forward with this. I don't know what I'm going to do. It ended up that it was a strange kind of sequence of events. But after that pregnancy, which ultimately ended with a miscarriage, he later had an unplanned pregnancy about 3 years later in his life. And some things had changed in the way that he looked about the world. One of the things was this. The mom of his girlfriend came to him and said, you know what, we don't love how this happened, but it's happening. And we're going to be there for you. We want you involved in this. And he felt very embraced by that. And he really became a man in that moment and began preparing, began getting, getting the apartment ready and everything to welcome this new life. And then when it happened in the hospital, just before the push, he said his son died. It was a stillbirth. There was no real explanation for it, but he looked at what happened and he slammed his phone on the ground and he was devastated. And he said, I wasn't ready back then, but man, I was ready. I was ready to be a man in someone else's life. As we interviewed young men across the country, who were somewhat represented in this docuseries that we made, we realized a hopeful trend. And that was, in a world that has been devastated by fatherlessness, there is certainly a movement of young men whose hearts have been gotten a hold of, who are standing by her in really empowering ways, who are ready for fatherhood and no longer see it as a discouraging burden that they're going to have to carry, but see it as an enlightening responsibility, see it as one of the greatest gifts they've been given. And that, in the midst of unplanned pregnancy, that heart for fatherhood gives me a lot of hope. And I hope we can have more hope as we look and see this message, because we know, right? Jesus has set us out into a world where it is costly to follow him, but we know he is the victor. And there's a lot of hope and restoration he's bringing about in the world. And I think that should really motivate us.
Amen. Yeah, there is so much hope, even in the middle of the statistics and the reality of what's happening. And the cool thing is we get to be a part of this revival and restoration of the kingdom when we are here on earth, although we won't see it fully, you know, until Jesus comes back. But I think that's why I love that phrase that you guys have been saying and that you've mentioned a few times, stand by her. Again, such an important concept. That I think I worked in a pregnancy center for a few years in college. And again, like, I totally get every statistic, every story that you're talking about when women come in and they don't have any support, especially from the partner and the father of the baby. So, or even a friend, you know, a girlfriend that they bring with them or someone like that. So, how, like, what does it look like to practically stand by her in a scenario where maybe there's a girl facing unplanned pregnancy in our school or in our church? What are some things that someone listening can do, like easy things in their own community that they can take that step to be a part of this?
Sammy, I think it's really important that we look at, in our society, there's so many opportunities here, because we really need to change the way we react to unplanned pregnancy in our society, right? We need parents who make it known to their daughters and to their sons that unplanned pregnancy is something they're willing to face together. We need friends who ask her how she's feeling and make it clear they're ready to walk alongside her every step of the way. We need young men who make a choice to speak well of and embrace fatherhood, even when that means sometimes choosing to give something to someone else you've never had yourself. We need employers who implement pro-mom workplace policies so nobody has to make a choice between their job and their child. And we need classmates who shut down gossip, and teachers and school admins who help pregnant high schoolers graduate and go get the bright futures that await them. We all have a part to play in this. I would say, practically speaking, if there's someone in your life who's experiencing an unplanned pregnancy now, or may, you know, may in the future, again, this is unplanned pregnancy, right? No one's planning for this stuff. There are a couple things that I'll say. First is that you should be someone who is a friend to others because you are constantly reminding them that you'll be there for them when it matters. They should feel ready to share with you. I'll share one quick story, and that's that, you know, my mom, when she found out she was pregnant and knew that her father could never find out about this, about a year after she went through with her abortion, her brother got pregnant with his girlfriend. And she watched as her brother went to their dad and told him what had happened. And she watched as he responded gently. He harbored no ill will. And
wow.
He wanted the best. He had some advice. But let me tell you that she had no idea it would be like that in that moment. And the truth is, you should never assume that the people around you assume that you're going to be there for them. They really don't know that unless you're vocal about it and you say it. So I think that that's the first step. The second thing is, make a commitment to walk alongside someone without the burden of their choice on you. So really the most empowering way you can stand by her in this instance is to demonstrate that your stake in this discussion is first and foremost for her, that you're going to be her friend, that you're ready to walk alongside, and that that's what you're committed to. And sometimes she'll make a tragic choice and you've got to have enough recognition of the big picture to go, you know, that was not your choice, right? It's not your responsibility that happened. But sometimes we're going to have friends who choose abortion, and we've got to have a similar resolve to stand by them. But in that moment, that person will know, you know, whether you're somebody who's going to be along with them for the ride or not. And secondly, I would say, when someone faces an unplanned pregnancy, we've heard this, and I don't, you know, I'm a dude, so I don't know this quite as well, but I'll be honest. The number of stories of people that we've heard who faced unplanned pregnancy and felt incredibly devastated about it and were wrapped in a suffocating hug by someone who really cared about them after that moment, that is a motivating factor to empower someone and help them to make a decision out of love and not fear is actually quite significant. And I know that just because of the sheer volume of people I've interviewed that have shared that suffocating hug was something that really blessed them and set them up to regain control of this situation and make the best decision. And so that's what I would say. To summarize, you know, I think you need to give someone a hug. I think you need to listen. I think you need to show them that you're going to be there for the long haul, no matter what they decide. And I think you need to be reminding the people in your life very faithfully that you're going to be there for them if they ever face something like this, that they should never question that. Because if you remind them, that's the only way they will never question that.
Yeah, wow, that's all so good. I could listen to your stories for days. Speaking of that, can we watch this documentary series that you guys made? How do we get to see that? Is it published and finished, or what's up with that?
It's published. There are 7 episodes. You could watch them at voicesforthevoiceless.org. Awesome. You can also check us out on Facebook and Instagram.
Okay, awesome. Yeah, I will link all of that because I know that a lot of people after hearing this are going to want to hear more stories and kind of learn from people that have been in this position what was helpful to them. And I think that's always inspiring for me to kind of learn what I can do to love my neighbor. Because sometimes we think we know, and for a person in that situation, they actually just, like you talked about, they just need us to be there and listen and give them a hug, you know. Most of the time, it doesn't even look like doing this extraordinary act. It can be really simple stuff. So that's really good. Josiah, thank you so much for being here and for sharing with us about Voices and your heart and what you do and just this message of how loving people really is what's going to be a catalyst to bring this these statistics about unplanned pregnancy and abortion down. I believe that. I believe in this message. And yeah, just thank you for being here with us.
Sammy, thank you so much for having me. It's an honor to be here.
Wow. After talking with Josiah, my heart is ignited to be a voice for the voiceless. And I hope that as he was talking, that spoke to your heart as well, that God may be calling you to do something for people that don't have the ability to fight for themselves. And if you think God is calling you to do that, I would encourage you to reach out to your local crisis pregnancy center or talk to your youth pastor about how to get involved or talk to your parents about how to get involved. Or you can email at AbundantLifeYM. That's our social media handles. Or you can email us at AbundantLifeYM@gmail.com. And we would love to reference you with an organization in your location, wherever you are, that is in this fight and that you can get involved with. It will be one of the most rewarding things that you do, and it will really show you a lot about what God thinks about every human and their identity, and that translates into who you are and what he thinks about your identity, and that is life-changing. So I am thankful for you guys. Thanks for tuning in this week. Remember to follow us on social media to keep up with all the things we're doing and all the content we're putting out for you. And also remember to go follow Voices for the Voiceless on social media and keep up with their website, to just see all of the life-changing work that they are doing in our country and internationally. Thanks, guys. We'll see you next time.